Hi, my name is Janelle Engelstad, and welcome to the MAP Radio Hour, a Make Art with Purpose podcast. The MAP Radio Hour includes conversations with creatives, scientists, and other people addressing the intersection of cultural, political, and environmental concerns. You can find out more about MAP and our projects at makeartwithpurpose.net. MAP series of podcasts produced in conjunction with MAP 2020, The Further We Roll, The More We Gain, our multi-form project that commemorates the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote, continues with artist Colleen Smith. Smith draws on experimental film, non-Western cosmologies, poetry, and science fiction to create drawings, films, and other work that reflects on memory and Afro-diasporic histories. Our conversation took place on the telephone while we were both sheltering in place, Smith in LA and I in Seattle, due to COVID-19. When this whole thing started, you were about to open at the Whitney, correct?
Yeah, that happened. I had a really beautiful opening there. It was very generous. The Whitney threw me a little party just for me, my friends, which was so sweet because there was another very large, very important opening happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually really fun, almost like family event. And then a week later, it closed. But it will be reopening soon. I think in August, the Whitney plans on reopening, and it's amazing, actually. They're going to extend the run so that it'll be actually running longer than it would have been.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so it's been really nice working with them on this project.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the film and being in the space that you designed for that. I really have appreciated your work for a long time.
And, well, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And I think one of the intersections I think that first interested me so much, I felt a connection with sound and music because that's my big passion in life is music. And just seeing your work over the years and pieces like Hello, where the sound is so integral to the piece that I find for me, sometimes I could close my eyes and that is a work of art within itself, the soundtrack, that it's...
I work so hard on the soundtrack that most people don't notice them, so that just makes me so happy. You have no idea.
Oh, good. And I don't mean to take away from the images or the thinking about how, you know, you're weaving sound and image, because that's really important. But there is a sense of the soundtrack that is so vital, you know, where it's not playing a backup role at all. And it's not just sound that happens to be there. I can really sense the thoughtfulness and the purpose, you know. You know, one of the things, of course, that's been written about a lot during the last few months is how much nature has come back in various ways in different spots around the earth with a slowing down of commercial activity. And the noise level, I mean, they've been recording the noise in New York City and comparing it to a year ago and how quiet New York is to a typical time. But one of the things that's been happening in terms of listening to the earth is seismologists at the University of Washington in Seattle here have been actually hearing parts of the earth that they have never heard before because it's so quiet in the atmosphere surrounding earth.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what to make of that. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. It's magical, you know?
Yeah. It's funny because that's what N.K. Jemisin says about the earth and her. It's like a totally fantastical fiction, but these people who are able to manipulate the like tectonic plates and everything of the earth don't know how they're able to do it. They've never been taught like kind of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
As a species. And finally, one of the more enlightened members of their group says, well, it used to be called magic. That's amazing. It's such a fascinating device he's using. I can't wait. I'm halfway through the book. But I just literally paused and replayed that moment where the character says, yeah, they used to call it magic.
There you go.
I thought that was brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the earth, she has her sounds. She moves and she breathes.
She definitely breathes, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Colleen is one of 19 female artists and writers participating in MAP 2020. The further we roll, the more we gain. MAP's festival that commemorates and critically examines the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote. Colleen designed two flags that commemorate Harriet Tubman and the Underground Railroad. She writes about her designs. The lines on these flags are the outline of the escape route mapped on a map created by Wilbur H. Seibert, published in 1898. The accuracy of the map is inherently dubious. If anyone had actually known the routes of transit, the Underground Railroad would have surely been raised. But the idea of a map to liberation, a runaway to freedom, is not only tantalizing but necessary. Can we gather our histories to collectively imagine new pathways towards freedom, justice, and self-determination? This flag does not show the way, but rather reminds us that our journey is long and the universe vast. Together, we might imagine our way into unknown worlds.
I really love that opportunity to make that flag, and I didn't realize that, like, I was paying attention to the other flags, and they were all very message-oriented, and I was like, oh, I think I missed the plot somehow, because I made something so abstract and oblique, like, you can't really know what it is unless somehow you recognize those squiggly marks.
Yeah, right. But I think that's good. I appreciate that. And it was interesting how everyone did create different things and what they did. It's a real strong body of work. So I'm really happy and I'm certainly honored that you participated. And
I was thrilled. You know, I actually think about flags all the time and have made a series of very, really hastily handmade flags. I was thinking about returning to that and trying to make them better, like make them look more like art objects instead of provisional objects. But this project kind of satisfied what I was thinking of in terms of a world without territories, or a world where things are marked in terms of liberation instead of containment or exclusion, you know?
Mm, yeah, celebrating something rather than...
But claiming it.
Yeah.
Like, this is the way forward as opposed to this is the edge or this is the barrier or the boundary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you talk some more about that?
I'm very interested in kind of the tools, the social tools that are used by the powerful to signify what they own or what they claim or how they express their power or how they organize themselves, like the military, churches... organizations that control the behavior and beliefs of large groups of individual people. I'm fascinated by the tactics that they use, and I'm always trying to figure out how to use them to undermine what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
because I feel like they're a bit like social weapons, and I'm trying to appropriate them in that way. And the flag is like really kind of at the center of nation branding, right? And it's like the way that Americans have so many feelings about flags. I mean, it's something to investigate, like what the flag is signifying. And so therefore, what are these feelings? What do they do to us? And I thought, well, in a better world, there would be no boundaries. So therefore, the flag would not have to tell you where you are. They could tell you something else.
Yeah.
You know, they could be signals instead of labels. I've been thinking about flags for quite some time and thinking about how to make them do that and not be sort of like decorative heraldry or power, but have them be signals for people.
Yeah, to be signposts, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, or path markers or something.
Yeah.
When I was living in New York, going to grad school many years ago, Group Material had a show. This is mid to late 80s, somewhere in there. And to walk into the gallery, you had to walk on an American flag. They had a big flag right at the entrance.
Yeah, I read about that. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And doing it was so subversive. And Felix Gonzalez Torres and I went to the same grad program, and we were friends. He was a couple years ahead of me, and he talked a lot about how they had to really think that out, even as Group Material, and they really had to figure out, can we do this? Are we going to get in any trouble? And do we have a waiver? Do people have to sign things? Because that is just such a big deal in this country to, like, do anything to this flag.
Yeah. It's very charged. Very. It's confusing to know what it's about. Why? Because I just don't really have those feelings when I look at the flag. If anything, I'm intrigued with how bombastic the American flag is. I'm always trying to imagine it sort of like presentation to the world. And it's like, my God, it's such a bombastic, silly looking little thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it really does sort of like encapsulate our conduct in so many ways.
Yeah. That and the money, what's printed on our money.
Yeah.
That has a whole nother set of symbolism. And, well, Freemasonry, everything has on there. Religion, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, that's actually another really fascinating hot point, because I know so many people are really invested in putting Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill.
Uh-huh.
I think of an idea that's, like, more repulsive to me, more insulting, and the idea that you would put a fugitive, ex-slave, a commodity, a human being that was understood to be a commodity for most of her life on American money just seems like the ultimate insult. It makes me think that Americans are really confused about what money is. And the idea that we should feel good about it at all is hilarious to me. What could money possibly reflect?
Yeah.
That we want to be associated with. I certainly don't want someone who I admire as much as Harriet Tubman anywhere near that. I was like, wow, he has to have such a profound attachment to money to think this is a good idea. But I'm really scared it might actually happen. It's a terrifying thought.
You're the first person I've heard say that. I'm glad you brought that up. It's very provocative and something to really think about.
I mean, money as it is right now is really one of the most truthful and honest symbols of our country. It says exactly who the money belongs to and who exactly it's for.
Right. Yes.
To leave it that way until things are different.
That's right. Yeah, putting her on it is just perpetuating the lie.
I think so.
Yeah.
But I don't need to feel good about my money, so there you go.
There you go. So, can we talk a little bit about Alice Cotrain and the Vindantic Center?
Well, sadly, it is now gone. The fires last year took it, which is, I'm not sure sure it's a tragedy because, you know, her children sold the place and kind of sold it out from under her students who were living there even. And I'm not sure it mattered anymore. I mean, it sold for very little money considering it's land in Malibu, you know, mm-hmm. because there were so few permanent structures. It was really striking to me visiting that. That in itself is the mandir where the music and worship happened. Mm-hmm. And then all the other structures were, if not kind of like semi-permanent, they were provisional. They didn't look or feel institutional in any way. Like they had ambitions of permanence or grandeur. You really got the sense that it was only inside the mandir when the Sunday services, which were open to the public, were happening, that you could get a sense of what was occurring there, like why this place is so such sort of sacred ground. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, like her students who I met when I visited, they talked about how Alice understood that land, she understood it to be Chumash land and would let people come and do their ceremonies on the land whenever they needed to anyway. And so it just seems like maybe that fire reclaiming it made sense somehow.
It does.
Yeah, and I think that, like, there's a tree on that property that was kind of, like, protected by this embankment of cement and a waterway. And I don't think that it burned down. And that tree was what I was told. She felt that John Coltrane's spirit was in that tree. And she would sit underneath the tree, and they called the tree John Coltrane. And she would sit under the tree and talk to him. And I think that tree actually survived the fire and then it's still there, which is pretty amazing.
Something I noticed on your reading list that really interested me was Annie Besant, which kind of connects in a way in a spiritual thread to Coltrane. They're very different, but I know that's something that's been a part of your practice is these different spiritual traditions. People claiming traditions, people reclaiming unknown histories in traditions, I think, you know. And it's not very often that you see Annie Besant on reading lists.
I got into Annie Besant through Sun Ra. Mm. And in his book collection, he had a couple of her books and other theosophist books. And I just thought that was, I thought his level of curiosity into different ways of thinking, different thought forms was important. He always talked about sound as having shapes. I mean, mm-hmm. he has wonderful monologues about a particular shape of particular sounds. And I absolutely love that. And so Annie Besant painting those thought forms just seemed like it made so much sense in relationship to music and sound, and a different way to think about language altogether, and a different way to think about visual language altogether. I don't know, I guess there's some way in which the paintings are very formal and abstract, but for her, full of content, emotion, and all that is so interesting. She's unwilling to separate those things. That was my real interest in her. You know, as I said before, I'm really interested in these systems of thought that organize people, but I'm not necessarily interested in them for the reasons that they exist or function, but more for what their potential is or what they can teach you, you know? Mm-hmm. I guess that's what I learned from Annie Besant.
Yeah, that along with Sun Ra is breaking this boundary of how we perceive our perceptions and the limitations of perception and,
yeah,
you know, what we're taught to tap into and how we're taught to listen and see the world and... So I appreciate that for the same reason, because I do feel like you can totally see sound. And you can also yeah. hear things that seem not to speak that you can see, such as a rock. And it's so, is there anything that is on your mind or anything you'd like to say? I mean, this is hosted by a university, so I think a lot of students listen to this. Maybe if there's something you'd want to say to students or...
Hey, out on the street, we need you. It's going to be a long vlog, but I feel so excited about all the change makers in the world right now and the agitation. It's working. It's really working, but it's just going to take a really long time. to it's start- like really the moment where like everybody in this world has their part to play, and young people are so crucial for agitation and activism, because just physically the stamina, energy, and pure-hearted belief in what's right, that you need to do that, is crucial and so important, especially right now. So I just encourage young people to, like, embrace the experience of being out on the street. It'll shape the rest of your lives, and it's a beautiful thing, and we're going to actually make some change.
It feels like it.
It really does.
It feels more possible than ever before.
It really does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So...
That would be my message. The MAP Radio Hour is produced by Matthew Horton. Theme song and logo by Otto Huditz. I'm Janelle Engelstad. Thanks for listening. And visit makeartwithpurpose.net to learn more about MAP, our projects, and to connect with us on social media.